All right, Jordan, we are live, which that sounded very awkward for me to say because my name is Jordan, your name is Jordan. And man, first and foremost, I just really want to say huge thank you for coming on and doing this. And the reason I say that is because very few people I ever talk to and maybe have a disagreement with are willing enough to come on and have a public debate. It's like very few people are willing to do that. And just literally the other day, someone, they called me out on social media, which is fine. But they never spoke to me first. They never came to me to talk. And I love how you came on my page. You were like, you disagreed with me, which is fine. And I love that. And then when I asked you if you'd want to hop on and have a call, you were immediately like, yes, absolutely. Let's do it. And I respect that a lot because if nothing else, even if at the end of this, we don't come to a point of consensus or agreement, then at least the people listening to this will be able to make their own decisions. And I think that's the best part of it.
Yeah, and I really do appreciate you having me on. I've been following you for a while. You're a king in the fitness industry, and I really do appreciate a lot of stuff you do. I'm sure we'll probably hit on some points. This last post is something that's kind of resonates at home with me, and I have maybe a little bit more experience with you with the actual subject and the calories, so I feel like this would be a good topic to talk about, and I really appreciate you too as well for having me on for the debate.
Of course, man. It's a pleasure. And basically, so what I want to do is I'm a big, big believer in definitions and clarifying things, just because I think without clarification, it's easy to go off track. So the point of this debate, this discussion, is not for me to prove you wrong or for you to prove me wrong. What I really want to do here is I want to find where we agree. I want to find the points we agree on. And then from that, maybe find out the areas which we disagree on and see if we can come to a area of consensus and go from there. This is not about ego. This is not about me trying to prove you wrong. This is mainly just I want to have a really nice civil discussion and we'll go from there. So
yeah, absolutely, man. And at the end of the goal, our main job is to help people. And whether you help them or I help them, as long as the people get the help and they get the results they want, then we're both winning.
I could not agree more. I'm super happy that we're doing this. So really, thank you. So with that being said, all I'm going to do is I'm going to just say what the post was that I put up, and then I'll give you the floor to tell me why you disagree with it. So the post I put up was literally just me holding a piece of cardboard saying, let me actually just read it verbatim so I don't mess anything up. The cardboard said, calorie deficit is the only way to lose fat. So with that said, tell me, what do you disagree with?
So basically, calorie deficit is not the only way to lose fat. I kind of believe that if with that statement, you're kind of saying that all calories are created equal.
Okay.
And that's what I don't really agree with. I think each calories and each type of food, macros, affect the body differently. And it's all about how it affects the body's hormones and the hormonal response more than just what the calories are.
Got it. Okay. So this is the perfect starting point. So you said two different things there, and I think it's important to clarify. So you said the way that calories and macros affect the body. My question to you is, what is the difference between calories and macros?
So that's a great question. And I appreciate you for asking that. So basically, All the calories are basically the accumulation of the macros. So the macros are fat has an average of 9 calories, and then you know carbohydrates and protein are at 4. So basically, just off of that, they're all created not the same. So if you have 100 calories of fat, it's going to affect your body differently than 100 calories of protein.
Got it. You agree on that? I agree with that completely. And I just want to clarify to make sure we're on the same page. It's the composition of the macronutrients that are affecting the body differently. It's not the calories, right? Because you basically just said you defined what each macronutrient had in terms of number of calories.
Yes.
But just by doing that, you said that each calorie, because they're defined equally among the macronutrients, all of the calories are actually equal. It's the macronutrient that makes the difference in how it affects the body, correct?
It's the macronutrient and also the type of macronutrient. So, you know, trans fat and DHA fats are two different types of fat, and they 100%. are both technically fats, but the way they affect the body are going to be differently. One's going to raise your metabolism. One could possibly lower your metabolism. Correct.
So there are different types of fats, different types of carbs, different types of proteins. We are in a complete agreement on that. But the original statement was that all calories are not created equal. So how about this? How about we just define what is the definition of a calorie?
So to me, the definition of a calorie is going to be the sum total of the macronutrients.
Okay, so that's actually not the definition of a calorie.
Like a calorie is basically the unit of energy for pulled from the macronutrients. So a calorie is basically kind of like a scale of energy.
Yes. So the calorie is just, it's a unit of measurement, right? It measures how much energy is in the food, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So it's just a scale telling us how much energy is in a given food.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So with that in mind, do you still agree with the statement that all calories are not created equal, considering that it's just a measurement of energy?
Yes, because of the way it affects your hormones.
So let me ask you this. Is a mile on the pavement the same distance as a mile on sand?
No, because I feel like the sand is going to give more stress to your joints. It's going to
You misunderstood. It's not how stressful it is on the body. Is it the same distance?
Yes. It's the same distance.
Perfect. So if a mile uphill is the same distance as a mile downhill, a mile on the sand is the same distance as the mile in the forest. A mile is always a mile, correct?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so we're in agreement on that.
Yeah, so if we look at it in terms of money, if I give you $10 $1 bills and you give me 10 $100 bills, they're both technically the same weight, but the value is different, correct?
No. No.
So if you give me 10 $100 bills and I give you 10 $1 bills and they're both the same weight, they're the same weight, but the value of the bills are different, right?
So are we measuring the value or measuring the weight?
I think it's the same. And I think that's where people are kind of getting confused at, because technically, I mean, it's like a yes and no thing. If you do reduce the calories, and calories are the same, but the way they affect the body are different.
I agree. So but the difference is it's not the calories, because a calorie is just a unit of measurement. All it does is tell you how much energy is in the food. So let's go back to the mile example for a second. And if you want, we can go back to the money example if you want to.
Yeah, no, we can stay on the mile example.
In the mile example, the only thing we're measuring is the distance, right? And so if we go back to the money example, then we'll figure out which one we're actually measuring, whether it's the value or the weight. But in terms of distance, like you said, a mile is always a mile regardless. Now, like you actually said earlier, running on sand will be way more difficult than it will be running on pavement. It might take you longer to run a mile on sand than it does to run a mile on the pavement. It might take you longer to run a mile uphill than it does to run a mile downhill, but you're still running a mile, correct?
Yes.
And so there, all we're looking at is, because a mile is a unit of measurement, right? It's just, it measures how long something is, and it comes out to that same length and distance every single time, no matter what. So bringing that over to a calorie, it's a unit of measurement. Same thing. It measures how much energy is in a food. So if we're taking 100 calories from an apple versus 100 calories from a donut, no one in their right mind would ever say that they have the same nutrient composition. No one would ever in their right mind say that sand and pavement are the same composition. But a mile in the sand and a mile on the pavement, that is always the same distance no matter what, because it's irrelevant relative to the actual distance, right? The composition of it doesn't make how long the distance is. So with that in mind, going back to the donut and apple analogy, we have two different foods with two completely different nutrient makeups. Clearly the apple has more fiber, it's more nutrient dense, it's a quote unquote healthier food for you. But it doesn't change the fact that the amount of energy in 100 calories from an apple is the same amount of energy as 100 calories from a donut. And the reality is calories don't affect our body any differently per food, because all it does is tell us how much energy is in the food. The only thing changing is the nutrient composition, which is why the apple would be the better choice. But that doesn't mean that the calories are not different, or that the calories are different.
So the reason I kind of just, I 100% hear what you're saying. The reason I do disagree with you is the exact same reason. So the calories are not really different, but say, let's just say that.
Got it. So the calories are not different.
So let's just say that we're both eating a diet and it's like 1,000 calories we're eating a day.
Yep.
But you're eating 1,000 calories in fast food and I'm eating 1,000 calories of salad and plant-based, and we just eat once a day. And that's all we eat is, and we're both eating the same amount of calories, but you're eating processed foods and I'm eating whole foods, right?
Okay, sure.
So now what I'm saying is the effect on the body, is that going to be the same effect if we go 10 days? Is it going to be the same effect and we're going to have the same weight loss, or we're both on the same program and we're both taking off those calories each time, and you're on the Big Macs and I'm on the salad?
That's a wonderful question. Actually, did you know that I did a Big Mac challenge?
No, something like the Morgan Spurlock thing.
I ate a Big Mac every day for 30 days, and I documented it. It's on my Instagram. It's on my YouTube. I did exactly that.
And how'd you feel? How'd you feel emotionally? Well,
so hold on. That now we have to differentiate. Are we talking about fat loss, or are we talking about health / how you feel in general? Because there's two different discussions.
We're talking about everything in totality, and fat loss especially, because I believe that fat loss is going to be different. This is why I'm saying this, because I believe the food is going to affect the leptins levels and the hormones differently. So I feel like if you're having those Big Macs every day and you would have did 30 days on a raw salad compared to the Big Macs, your fat percentage would have dropped more on the raw salad than it would on the Big Macs, on the same exact fitness program and the same exact everything. The only thing you're changing is the salad to the Big Mac.
So you think that if calories are equal in terms of eating the same amount of calories, that I would lose more fat by eating quote unquote unprocessed foods as opposed to eating 1,000 calories of, we'll call it, Big Macs?
Yeah. Yes. 100%.
Okay. So if you're more than welcome to watch the documentary. I lost 7 pounds over that month, which was a significant percentage of my actual body weight, because I started at about 150 pounds and I ended at around 143.
And did you measure body fat for that?
No, so I didn't measure my body fat.
Okay.
But I increased my strength throughout the process. One thing that I spoke about in the documentary was the difference in how I felt throughout that. Because I think it's important to discuss, but I think it's equally important to discuss and differentiate between fat loss and how you feel, and also fat loss and health, because they're intertwined. They're very intertwined, clearly, but they're not the same thing.
Yeah, and I still think that fat loss, I still think if we do a randomized study and we measure the people's body fat before, and then we have them on the 30 days on the Big Macs, and then we have them on 30 days on thing. I think you're going to see the body fat drop on the whole foods diet more than they are on the Big Mac diet, because it's empty calories basically.
So you know that those studies have been done, not necessarily with Big Macs, but in terms of testing different foods, different composition of foods for equal calories.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of the tests, I know there was I'm not 100% sure, but I know Richard Feynman, he did a study and basically said that junk foods basically have no effect on the thermal effect of the body, and basically whole foods and micronutrients are basically going to have you at a higher satiation rate, and they're going to raise your thermals compared to the junk food not raising your thermals in the body. Do you agree on that?
No, that's factually incorrect. I mean, if you want to go into that, we could talk about what do you mean by the thermals of the body? Define that for me.
So basically, do you know about the thermal effect from food?
Absolutely. Yep, I do.
So do you think it's the same thermal effect if you eat, like I said, say you have 100 calories of kale and then I have 100 calories of a brownie? Are we going to have the same thermal effect if it's both the same amount of calories?
Well, that's going to depend on the macronutrient composition of the food, not on whether or not it's processed. The thermic effect of food is dependent on whether or not you're eating protein, carbs, or fats, and the combination of it. It's not dependent yes. on where the food comes from.
Yes, and that's what I'm saying is the processed foods is going to have a lower thermal effect than the non-processed foods.
So, what is a processed food? Tell me, like, what makes a food processed or not?
So, processed foods are like box foods. Most of the foods in the grocery stores, like so, organic foods are foods like breakfast cereals. Think about do you have a bread, cheese.
Do you have a definition? Like, so one clarifying way to define what a processed food is?
Well, basically when salt, sugar, like oils, are added and like packaged into the foods, like, you know what I mean? That's like the result of processed foods. And think unprocessed foods are going to be like vegetables, grains, fruits and stuff like that. That's not having anything else added, you know, to preserve and to process it. Does that kind of make sense?
Well, a little bit, but I mean, if we're really being straightforward, so if your definition of process is adding something to it, is that what your definition of process is, where it's like you add something to it?
Yeah, where you're adding like salt, sugar added to the food, or mostly where you're adding stuff that's not naturally found in the foods.
Well, because if that's the definition, then the reality is, unless you're growing your own food in your backyard, all food is processed, because just through
I do agree, but there's a minimum amount of processed food and then a highly amount of processed. There's like different levels. So you're correct. The stuff in the grocery store is still processed, even though the organ, but it's a lower level of processed than the higher level.
So at what level of processing does that change the thermic effect of food?
I think it changes the thermal effect based on like the organic account and based on the types of food.
So whether or not it's organic makes it change the thermic effect?
Or organic and the macronutrients, like the carbohydrates that are processed have a low thermal effect than more than the like the vegetables and the raw greens that are processed. So if you have like you said, like spinach and stuff like that is minimally processed, and fruits and stuff, but that's going to have a more of a high thermal effect than the processed foods. Like you say, if you have like Aunt Jemima's waffles, or you have like Lay's potato chips, and they're both carbohydrates.
Got it. So I have to ask, do you have research on that and peer-reviewed research showing that that type of processed food would have a lower thermic effect?
That would have a lower yeah, so I'm going – I basically do have – I could kind of pull it up, but I'm going off of my personal clients. I trained over 1,000 people over the years, and the results that they got long-term eating – the people that just had flexible diets and ate processed foods compared to the people that ate whole foods – and nutrients. And this goes even far into, I know you didn't want to dive into this, but this goes into like acne, emotional health, and just general well-being as well too.
People that are eating
the whole foods feel better, they look better, and then their insides are better too. I feel like they're internally, their livers, their kidneys, their organs kind of respect them a little bit more. The people that do 80% to 90% plant-based, and then that kind of maybe just would eat out with friends and do stuff like that instead of the flexible dieting.
Got it. And I'll tell you, I very much agree that a more whole foods, minimally processed diet is going to be healthier for you from a physical perspective, emotional perspective, mental perspective. I think it's going to be healthier for everybody. And I also think it's way more easy to have a lower body fat, to feel yes. better, that to when you do have a minimally processed diet. The concern that I have is, number one, it's factually incorrect to state that the thermic effect of food changes based on processing, because to my knowledge, that is completely and utterly inaccurate, and there's zero research supporting that. It is based on that.
How about your personal experience? Like, if your personal experience, if you go on, say we do like a 10-day challenge, and you do 10 days on raw foods, and you do 10 days on processed foods on the same calorie amount.
Well, so now we're talking about two different things. You're talking about how do I feel versus a thermic effect of food. And the thermic effect of food is something that you can actually measure in a laboratory versus how I feel is more subjective, right? It's like, and I think it's important. But
yeah.
I really want to clarify for the sake of everybody listening that just to say based on your experience with your clients, like, well, the thermic effect of food is higher based on your results. Your client's results are based on a multitude of things. And to say that you can just tell that the thermic effect of food is different, that's inaccurate. Like, you can't actually do that unless you're in a laboratory testing the thermic effect.
Correct. And I haven't 100% did that. This is like 90% intuition. And this is going off of stuff. I know there's a guy, I think his name is Richard Feynman. I actually should have looked it up before, but I know he did different studies on the different effects of foods, and he did prove that the thermal effects. I could see if I could kind of find his name. Are you familiar with his study?
I don't, but I do know, for example, that I know the thermic effect of food is very, very important to understand, and which is one of the reasons why having a higher protein diet can be so beneficial, because
high protein has
the highest thermic effect.
But I agree.
Regardless of what food you're eating, the thermic effect is determined on the macronutrient composition. So, for example, a very lean cut of meat, like chicken, for example, would have a higher thermic effect than we'll call it a fatty cut of steak, because
I agree.
And that's all based on the fatty cut of steak having more fat, which has essentially zero thermic effect, but the protein has a much higher thermic effect. So the protein in of itself would have a higher thermic effect than we'll call it carbs or fats. But that's all based on the macronutrients, not based on whether or not it's processed. And that's very – and I want to clarify, because I think we agree on this. It's that you'll feel better when you eat a diet – mainly consisting of minimally processed foods, whole foods, nutrient-dense foods. We are in agreement on that.
Yes, and it would be healthier for you. And as far as long-term, do you agree that eating McDonald's long-term is going to break down your internal organs compared to eating whole foods? So I feel like the calorie-in thing is not sustainable long-term. If somebody wants to drop a quick 10, 20 pounds before a wedding or a weekend out with the guys, that's different than longevity and a lifetime full of health. Do you agree?
That I think is a wonderful discussion to have. I'm really glad you brought that up. Do you think it's realistic for someone to sustain a diet in which they never, ever in their entire life are allowed to have a treat?
Well, I think there has to be some sort of balance, because you can fall into depression and eating super healthy too. And even from personal things, you know, I had personal goals where I did competitive jiu-jitsu and I did wrestling matches and I had to go on a hardcore diet, and I fell into depression because I wasn't getting those sweets, and I was out with my friends or my family and they're eating whatever at Applebee's or they're at whatever restaurant and I'm not eating, you know? So that definitely has an effect mentally, and it is hard to sustain. So I think there is a balance, but I think the balance is at the 80 to 90% threshold and the 10 to 20% on the snacking. I don't think it's at
50%. I could not agree more. And in fact, I actually even just made a post not too long ago saying that I think being 100% perfect with your nutrition is more like prison, and I'd rather you be in the 90-10-80-20 range.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because you actually said earlier that your clients and you've seen people do better when they're not flexible dieting, but – and this is why I love the definitions. My definition of flexible dieting is 80-20, where it's like if you're having I don't know, 3 meals a day for a month – then I don't know the math of that. I believe, let's say we have, let me do this on the math calculator. So 3 meals a day times 31, 93. So we'll go 2 times 93.
We'll just say 100 meals, make it easier.
Yeah, perfect. So over that course of that month, we'll call it like 20 meals or so, where it's like you can sort of relax a little bit, and doesn't mean binge.
And not 20 consecutive meals. That would be like, 100 meals, one bad meal. You know what I mean? Something like on some sort of scale like that, where it's a little bit manageable. Maybe you have two bad meals back to back, but you don't want to layer on the bad meals, because then that's going to halt your results as well.
You and I are in so much agreement, it's not even funny. I think it's more about, and it doesn't have to be like, okay, so we got to actively plan these 20 meals and it has to be a huge binge. No. It's more like if there's a birthday party or a social event or your daughter's birthday and you want to have a slice of pizza, or it's your nephew's graduation ceremony and you want to have an ice cream cone or whatever, God forbid, you want a slice of apple pie, like, then you have the pie and you get back on track and you follow that 80-20 rule. I think you and I are very much in agreement on that.
You're the man. I definitely agree with that statement. And that's the same thing too. If you haven't seen a friend for a while, or you just had a big achievement at work, you know, you have a cigar or drink with some guys, they give you a meal at a nice steakhouse and you kind of have the butter or whatever. Yeah, I think that's all part of the life and the social thing too. And that, I think, is honestly better for the mental, as opposed of, like you said, being on the jailhouse lockdown and the 100% and the bodybuilding style lifestyle.
I wrestled growing up. I do jujitsu as well. So I mean, we're very much on the same page with that. I would say that you actually are much more aligned with the flexible dieting crowd than you might believe, just based on all this. And because obviously there are some charlatans and some zealots and some people who are very dogmatic, and they say that, you know, calories are all that matter. And anyone who says calories are all that matter is an ignoramus. Of course they're not. Quality of your food absolutely matters. The quality of your food is incredibly important for your mental health, your emotional health, your physical health. But that doesn't mean that all calories are not created equal. Calories do matter. And if you want to lose fat, you are required to be in a calorie deficit. That doesn't mean go eat a whole bunch of nonsense for the entire month or for the entire 3 months. It doesn't mean that the majority of your diet should be Pop-Tarts and pizza. What it does mean is that if you want to lose fat, you must understand that the amount of food you're eating is incredibly important, and you have to keep it in check, regardless of whether you're plant-based, regardless of whether you do keto, regardless of whether you do Weight Watchers. You have to keep in check how the amount of food you're eating, and it's easier to do that when you're having a lot of minimally processed foods, because it's generally lower calorie, so you'll have a better chance of staying on track. But to say that you don't need a calorie deficit to lose fat is completely and utterly inaccurate, and to say that all calories are not created equal is factually incorrect, mainly just in the fact that it's just a unit of measurement. It just tells you how much energy you're putting into your body. It doesn't tell you the nutrient composition of the food that you're putting in your body. It doesn't tell you the health impact that food will have on your body, but it does tell you how much energy you're putting in your body. And that is very important. Do you agree?
Yes, I do agree. What do you think about this same context we're talking about in the terms of fasting? Now, say we're both on a fast and we're both talking about our calories the same equal if we're eating once a day and we're on a 23-hour fast. Is it going to be the same results?
As long as your calories are equal, yes, they will be.
They will be.
Yes, absolutely. And there's
you don't think you'll have a lower fat amount if you're eating healthier food?
Do I think you'll have a lower fat amount?
Like, do you think, like, so if you have like a so they have there have been studies that has say like low carb diets, like, you know, and high protein diets are going to you'll burn like more calories average than compared to diets that are more high in carbs, like on a daily basis. Have you seen any studies?
Say that one more time. Clarify the studies for me.
Okay, so basically, if I'm on a high carbohydrate diet and I'm on a low carbohydrate diet and a high protein diet, the amount of energy and the amount of calories I burn daily are going to be a little bit different, correct, based on the high carb, high protein, or high fat?
Based on the thermic effect of those macronutrients, absolutely, yes. And I think you're 100% correct. That being said, if we're looking at those studies and the calorie intake is equal among those groups, the total fat loss is equivalent, because the thermic effect of food doesn't dictate whether or not you lose fat. What dictates whether or not you lose fat is whether you're not in a calorie deficit or a calorie surplus or in maintenance. So as long as the calorie deficit is equivalent among those groups, whether it's high carb, low fat, or high fat, low carb, whatever it is, as long as the calorie deficit is equivalent, regardless of whether you eat one meal a day or even up to 22 meals a day, there's studies that measure meals from 1 to 22 a day, and as long as calories are equal, fat loss is equivalent.
And do you think that that's the same for everybody, or do you think genetics play a different part in that, and disease plays a different, and everybody's going to have a different effect to that? Or are you saying that the calories are going to be the same and the results are going to be primarily the same for everybody across the board?
Genetics play a role in absolutely everything. And anyone who says otherwise is an ignoramus again. Uh-huh. That being said, James Smith said something really interesting recently, and I liked it a lot. He said something to the effect of, when you hear hooves, you think horses, not zebras, right?
Uh-huh.
And by that, what he was saying was, you think about the overall mass of the population, the overarching group of people who make up the majority of the people in the data we're looking at. The vast majority of people do not have genetic disorders that are preventing them from losing fat. There are some very, very few people that have it, and whether and the fortunate news is that there's a lot of medication now. Let's say they have a thyroid issue or PCOS, yes, or whatever it is, they can go get medication that will essentially bring their levels back to normal, and they can be on the same playing field. This is one of the reasons why when I was doing a lot of one-on-one coaching, I wouldn't take someone on as a one-on-one client if they had hypothyroidism and they were not willing to get medicated. I was always happy to work with someone if they were willing to be medicated, but if you're not willing to take the medication that's going to bring your hormone levels back to normal, then you're starting with a huge disadvantage. So,
and I agree.
So I knew that we agreed on way more than we disagreed. And I actually think that we basically agree on pretty much everything. I think this is why, my man, it's annoying, but I think it's so important to have definitions for these things. And because if we don't have clear definitions, then we're all sort of just playing based on our own perception. And if you're playing on perception and not what we clearly define, then we're all going to be arguing and debating, because the only person who knows your perception is yourself. So
yeah, exactly. And that's why I honestly do really respect you a lot for having me on and having the debate. You know what I mean? That was really a lot of, you know, I really do kind of appreciate you talking, and I think people really need to know too. And I'm glad that you did agree on the plant foods and stuff, because a lot of other people out there are running with the calories in and calories out, and I don't think they're stressing the importance of the whole foods and even like the spices and herbs that you could add into your foods that are going to have a great effect on your body positively. Like, there's a lot of stuff that we could do with our food. And I think our food is essentially our medicine, you know? So
I think exercise and food are the two most underrated and massively important things that we can use to improve our health. I very much agree with you on that. And anytime I see someone who says that all you need to worry about is calories, I get upset, because that's not all you need to worry about. But when someone says that calories don't count or that all calories are not created equal, it's factually incorrect. And it sets a lot of people up for more disordered eating habits. And you brought up depression because you couldn't even just feel like you could go to Applebee's or whatever with your family. The reality is, and as you know better than anybody, if you're going to sustain health long term and a low body fat long term and live a healthy lifestyle, you have to be able to enjoy it. It can't be something that you suffer through. It has to be something that you enjoy and can live with. And for that specifically, you need to be able to include some of maybe your favorite treats that are not the quote unquote healthy unprocessed foods in a way that's responsible, in a way that's not overly restrictive and doesn't lead to a binge. And the way to do that is to, I think, first and foremost, to understand that if you are in a calorie deficit and you include those foods, you're still going to lose fat. It doesn't mean that those foods should be all you eat, but it does mean that when you do eat those foods, there's no reason for you to feel guilty, because you did nothing wrong. Just get right back on track.
Yeah, 100%. I like the one thing you said. I think respect what you said, like in terms of eating and the foods, like if people kind of working in the stuff but I think they need to push on too, like a lot of the Big Macs and a lot of meals. I think people eventually need to get comfortable with learning what their body responds to and what they like personally, because what you like and what works for you might not work for me, you know, and vice versa. So I think people just kind of, and when you do have those meals, like, I think there is a way to always make it a little bit healthier. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and it's not going to be a one day process, but there's always something you could take away or something you could add on. You know, I didn't like cooking at first. And then over the course of the years, now I love cooking for myself, because I have certain tastes and preferences that I like, and I can have those meals that I thought that were fat and out of control, and I could have those with healthy organic stuff if I kind of make that myself. And now, and also too, as I'm out, I think the world in the last 5 to 10 years has exploded with the plant-based options and even the healthy options. And even, like you said, the fast food restaurants now have different options for people and stuff, where it is making it easier to eat a little bit better. You shouldn't kill yourself for having a bad meal, but I think there's always room for improvement as well.
I completely agree, man. I completely agree. Now, just to circle back, just to bring it all together, going back to the original post, do you still disagree with the post in which I basically just said, I don't even remember the actual quote. Let me just read it really quick. The actual quote was, calorie deficit is the only way to lose fat. Do you still disagree with that, or do you now agree with what I was saying?
I kind of agree with what you're saying, but I feel like you could still lose fat without reducing your calories if you're having high quality meals and your workouts and your sleep is on par. And over the long term, you could maintain the same amount of calories and lose body fat with a good nutritional plan and a good exercise and diet program. If you're focusing on strength building and you're focusing on good cardio, I think you could still cut down your body fat with keeping your calories the same.
Got it. Okay. So I don't want this to go too long, but I do think this is important to clarify. What do you mean by keeping your calories the same? So let's say, for example, in order for someone to be in a calorie deficit, maybe someone's calorie deficit is 1800 calories, right? That's going to be a sustainable calorie deficit for them. If someone is currently eating 2400 calories and they're not in a calorie deficit, could they just keep eating 2400 and lose body fat even though they're nowhere near a deficit?
If they're on the right exercise training program and they're getting the right amount of sleep, I think their body fat can drop, still keeping the calories at 2400. I know for me personally, a lot of times too, and you know too, from wrestling and from fitness, a lot of times too, you might even up your carbs or up your calories a little bit, and you're still able to burn body fat based on the energy output that you're putting out and the exercises and the workouts that you're doing. And I think that's where exercise comes into play, because that could be a key tool in kind of detailing your body. Now, if you're not exercising, you're going to need to drop the calories. But if you're ramping up your exercising and you're doing more HIIT workouts and you're changing up your strength training and stuff, I think you can lose body fat long term on the same amount of sustained calories.
I think this is a great discussion. So tell me, why do you think, what about exercise, if you're eating in a caloric surplus, would allow you to lose body fat?
Not really like a surplus. If you're eating the same, say we're maintaining 2000 calories and I start weightlifting. And I now have more muscle on my body. I have more muscle mass on my body than I did a month ago. That higher amount of muscle is going to burn more fat and more calories throughout the day, throughout the week, throughout the month. So over time, the more muscle mass I put on is going to decrease the amount of body fat percentage.
Now, that is a very good point, and I agree with you. Now, this is an interesting component. How long do you think it would take for someone who's eating, because you, which is very, very smart, because 2400 is just too much. It's like if 1800 is your deficit, 2400 is a lot. Like you're way off. But 2000, it's close enough now where when you're working out, maybe the workouts are burning enough calories. So now that your energy output is increased, so you might actually be getting into that deficit range of 1800. And then here's a really interesting point, and I've spoken about this a fair amount, where when you're eating closer to maintenance, and I love how you brought this up, I think this is going to help a lot of people, when you're eating closer to maintenance and you're not in a deficit, I for me, is in my inner circle, I call it momentum, because yes. I think too many people think of maintenance as they're not making any progress, whereas I look at maintenance as you're actually building up momentum to keep on going forward, and you're fueled more, you have more food in you, you can work out better, you're stronger, you're happier. So I think this is actually, if between you and me and everyone listening, I prefer maintenance, because it's something that you can sustain long term. The reason that I think a lot of people struggle with it is because they're not seeing the results as quickly and they're not patient enough.
And that and that's a big thing, like you said. I think it's kind of like the patience. It's going to take a longer time, and it's, your body has to get adjusted to it. When you drop the calories, you're kind of tricking your body, and you're automatically taking something away. So you're lowering the amount of calories, so you're burning more energy with lower calories. But if you could raise your metabolism over time, you could still get the same results. But you, like you said, people want the it's delayed gratification isn't as welcoming as, you know, the fast. I want to lose 30 pounds in 30 days as compared to losing 30 pounds in 3 years, you know, because you could lose probably 30 pounds of good fat in 3 years compared to you might lose 30 pounds of water weight in 30 days, you know.
I very much agree. It's funny that you say 3 years, because I've said a lot recently that if I'm going to write a book, I'm going to call it the 5-year plan, because most people want their fitness resolved in 30 days. And I'm like, all right, well, it's really going to take 5 years for you to really like see like a tremendous progress now. But this discussion, I think, is really important, because one of the things that I'll do with clients is if I'm working with someone new, and they've just struggled and struggled and struggled, they've never really seen results. Usually what I'll do is I'll just go in a straight deficit at the beginning.
Okay.
The reason being, a lot of these people just don't believe they can succeed at all. They're just at a place in their life where they don't think they can succeed, and they want to see results. And I'm like, great, I'm going to build up your self-efficacy. We're going to see results. So we go
100%. I agree.
And from there, after they see the results and they trust me and they know it's working, then what I'll often do is I'll actually increase calories back to about maintenance. And we'll either do one of two things. We'll go through periods of straight deficit and then maintenance, straight deficit and then maintenance, to mm-hmm. give them breaks. Or we'll go after that straight deficit, and maybe they're at a body weight in which they're happy and like they're lean enough, we'll go to maintenance and we'll just hang out there for months and months and months, if not over a year, 2 years, and they'll get stronger and they'll feel better. And exactly what you said happens over those 2-3 years, where they get stronger, they build more muscle, they lose more body fat. But it is a very slow process. And when you look at the pictures month to month, every 3 months, it's not a huge difference. But when you look at them in 2 years, it is a completely different body.
100%. And you have to do that too, because lifting, losing weight is just as much emotional and mental as it is physical, especially if you're not an athlete and you're not used to it. I mean, like you said, like we've been working out since we're kids. You know, I started weightlifting with my dad at like 12, 13, my brothers all through high school. So I've been in it, and it's like when I seen results from 10th grade till me graduating college, and people are like, oh my gosh, like look how, but I was like, yeah, it was like an 8-year thing, but people really didn't realize that it was 8 years because of them just seeing me in the thing, and they see me up and down in weight, and they're like, oh, this month you're jacked, you lost weight. And I think a lot of times it kind of gets confusing with people as far as, like you said, the long-term results. And if you look at like a lot of pro athletes, like they look the same, like for most of their career, like, you know, most basketball players look the same. Like they're not making gigantic changes overnight, you know, unless they're on something. Bodybuilders even too, like it takes bodybuilders 10 to 15 years to build that physique of like doing the same exact thing, like regimented, very disciplined, you know. And I kind of trick some of my clients. What I do is I do a disciplined diet where I'll make them do like a 2 or 3 day fast every 21 to 30 days, you know, to kind of just reset their body, and to also help them kind of get a respike and a respark. And I think that kind of tricks them a little bit too. Or I'll lower, like you said, for a week, we'll maybe do like more liquids as compared to solid foods. And or I'll switch it out, like you said, the type of calories. Like if they're going a lot of carbs, then we'll go maybe high protein like for a little bit.
The type of macronutrients, right?
The type of macronutrients. Like I could play around with that while keeping the calories the same. And that's how my clients are kind of get some results too. I like to play around with the macros as well.
Makes total sense, man. And, you know, I think that we came to really a wonderful conclusion, and I'm very blessed and lucky that you came on and you spoke to me about this. Would you like to tell everyone where they can follow you if they want to?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram. My Instagram is at JabFit1. And also, too, JordanBearden.com and JabFitTraining.com are my sites. I'm working on my new membership site now. So it's going to be down. The relaunch is going to be at the end of February. But if you follow me on JabFit1, you'll see all my posts and all my contents, too. I put up a lot of jiu-jitsu workouts, and I also put up a lot of diet and health and nutrition stuff.
Amazing. Well, I have to thank you. You are a gentleman. You are incredibly kind. You're well-spoken. And I think this is going to help a lot of people. So I really appreciate you, man. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Thanks a lot for having me on, Jordan. I really appreciate everything you do for the health and fitness community. Likewise. Need to be more people like you.
Thank you, man. Have a wonderful night. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks, man. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.